The title of my message today is Endurance. Today I'm going to use some quotes without giving the name of the author. I'm going to do this for two reasons. One is it saves time, and two is I can't pronounce half their names. Hopefully I'll be educated in some foreign languages in the future. It's one of those happy coincidences when what you should do and what you want to do happen to coincide. My last message was entitled Expectations. And the thesis of that message was that one of the greatest threats that could cause anyone to leave the church or to abandon God is having incorrect, that is, unbiblical expectations about life, about the world, or even about God himself. We reviewed a prototypical example of this in Psalm 73, and actually I'd like to review that very quickly if you turn there. Psalm 73. And what you see in this psalm is that it's saturated with unfulfilled expectations, with Asaph's unfulfilled expectations about how the world works. And when his expectations are not met, he questions whether it makes any sense to follow God's way. And we'll skip around a bit, starting in Psalm 73, verse 2. My foot had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was jealous of the proud when I saw the peace of the wicked. For there are no pains in their death, but their strength is firm. Skipping down to verse 8. Psalm 73, verse 8. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak loftily. Verse 11. And they say, how does God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? So, in other words, there's no fear of God in these people that Asaph is observing. What's clear is that the way God was running the world, or the way that God's allowing the world to be run, does not meet with Asaph's expectations of how things are supposed to be. So his foot slips and he starts to stumble. And you see Asaph sort of using the if-then logic that Mr. Zerong spoke about. So he says, if the wicked have peace, if there's no pain in their death, and if I'm struggling and I'm trying to keep my heart pure, then where is justice? Where is God? This is not how Asaph expected the world to work. And we see where this logic leads him in verse 13. In Psalm 73, verse 13, excuse me, surely, surely, I have made my heart pure in vain. Again, if the wicked are at peace while they're alive, if there's no pain in their death, life is difficult for Asaph, even though he's trying to follow God's way, then it just seems like a waste of time. You know, what's the point of all this? Psalm 73, verse 16 and 17. When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me. Until. And as I mentioned last time, this word until is something missing in the life story of people who leave God or leave the church. For these stories, for these people, their stories end at, surely I have made my heart pure in vain. Period. And then they close the book. There's no until for them. Fortunately, there is an until for Asaph. We'll reiterate this, Psalm 73, verse 16 and 17. When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end. So, in other words, when he considered and maybe really came to understand for the first time the plan of God, many of the things that Mr. Kernicke talked about, you know, then he understood that the wicked will be destroyed. Not now, but eventually. And it's he said in verse 17, then I understood their end. But the fate or the end of those who endure in God's way of life, who overcome in this life, Psalm 73, verse 22 and 23 and 24. So foolish was I, and I did not know. I was like a beast before you. But I am always with you. You have held me by my right hand. You shall lead me with your counsel, and afterwards receive me to glory. So basically, Asaph understands that the wicked will be destroyed, and that he will eventually be received to glory. And because he understands this, he's now able to endure, the life that he was leading. We've already heard these verses. I'll just read through them fairly quickly about overcoming. Revelation 2, verse 7. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. We receive to glory. Revelation 2, verse 11. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. Again, reconfirming the fact that the wicked will be destroyed, not burning forever, in hell. Revelation 2, verse 26, and he who overcomes and keeps my works to the end, to him I will give power over the nations, which we just heard about in the first sermon. Revelation 3, verse 5, the one who overcomes, this one will be clothed in white clothing, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. Revelation 3, 21, to him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and have sat down with my Father in his throne. If you're in Revelation, please turn to Revelation 2, verse 5. Revelation 2, verse 5. I'm sorry, Revelation 2, verse 25. But that which you have, hold fast until. But that which you have, hold fast until I come. And I'd like you to think about, throughout the message today, again, this word until. So here's the question for you and I. Will we hold fast? Will we overcome? Will we endure till the end? Will we endure until Christ returns, as we just read about in that verse? To put it another way, will our story have an until or not? As I mentioned, the title of the message today is Endurance. The definition of endurance is defined as the ability to exert oneself for a long period of time. And I worked so hard to come up with a joke about enduring a sermon, and that's a certain type of activity that takes a long time, and then compare it to cricket, which, there's probably cricket games that started in 1812 that are still going on, but I just couldn't quite get there. So that was my best shot. So endurance is defined as the ability to exert oneself for a long period of time. Another way to put it is endurance is the ability to exert oneself until. And basically it means we don't quit. The opposite of this, of course, is to quit, to give up, to give in, to fall away, to not endure until. And the question that we have to ask is which category will we fall into? Today I'd like to look at two aspects of endurance. One is what we may have to endure as Christians in this life. And number two is what are the keys to enduring. So what may we have to endure and what are the keys to endurance? As I spoke about in my first message, I think it's important for me and I suspect for everybody else, one of the keys to endurance is knowing what to expect. A simple thing, Melissa and I came over on an 8-hour, my mom came over on an 8-hour flight. We had expected to sleep. We didn't expect to have two very loud, very rude, somewhat big people sitting behind us, kicking our chair, making all kinds of noise, banging on the table. Had I expected that, I may have slept earlier. I would have bought the little neck pillow, but I didn't expect it, so it sort of threw me off my game. Made the whole experience fairly miserable. So now knowing that that's a possibility, I will be prepared. So that's, in any event, that's one reason I want to endure, review what we may have to endure. The first topic to look at is persecution. We may have to endure persecution. Matthew 5, verse 10. Matthew 5, verse 10, blessed are those who have been persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So this means we may be persecuted for doing the right thing. And you think about your own life, whether it's work or say you have a debate with your wife or whatever it is, and how natural it is to struggle against being wrongly accused of something. But this says, blessed are we when we're persecuted for righteousness' sake. The expectation that the Bible said is clear, and the question for all of us is, can we endure that? The second thing we may have to endure in Matthew 5, verse 11, how about slander and reproach? Matthew 5, verse 11, blessed are you when they shall reproach you. And the definition of this word means to defame, to rail at, to chide, to taunt. Matthew 5, verse 11 and 12, blessed are you when they shall reproach you and persecute you, and shall say every evil word against you falsely, on account of me. And then, of course, one of the most unnatural statements in the whole Bible is verse 12, rejoice and leap for joy, for your reward is great in heaven. For in this way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So we know the Bible is true, and this is an attitude that we're supposed to develop, but it's something that we may have to endure and we should prepare for. A third example of something we may have to endure is testing. Testing. In James 1, verse 2, James 1, verse 2 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, which can also be translated endurance. So we may have to endure, almost certainly we'll have to endure the testing of our faith. James 1, verse 12, blessed is the man who endures temptation, or testing, because having been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. So testing and trials may be difficult, but as we see here, they're not without purpose. Another category are hostilities. Luke 6, verse 35, and this is from the literal translation. Luke 6, verse 35 says, but love the ones hostile to you, and do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return. And your reward will be much, and you'll be sons of the Most High. For he is kind to the thankful, unthankful, and evil. So when I read this, I imagined the people behind us on the plane asking for the blanket. And, you know, it's just such a simple thing. I wasn't being threatened with a sword or anything, but anyway, it pointed out an area that I need to work on, to love those hostile to us, and to lend, hoping for nothing in return. And I think it's evident this requires deep humility and faith on our part. Another category is chastening. Revelation 3, verse 19. Revelation 3, verse 19. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore, be zealous and repent. Hebrews, if you would turn there with me, Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, and we'll read verses 5 through 7. And have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons? My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives. Verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father does not chasten? And again, it's obviously all for our good that this takes place. One final example in James 5, verse 19 and 20. Not only may we be chastened or corrected by God, but at times we are have to endure correction by the ministry or another brother. James 5, verse 19 and 20. If anyone among you goes astray from the truth, brothers, and anyone turns him back, Know that the one turning the sinner from the error of his way will save the soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. There are also, as we talked about in the last message, some things we may have to endure within the church. And if you would turn to 1 Corinthians, please, we'll look at a number of things that were going on in the Corinthian church. And I'd like you to consider that that's your congregation, that you're sitting in this congregation, and these things are taking place. Or you can imagine that you're Paul, and what would you do with all these things taking place? 1 Corinthians 1, verse 11. For it has been declared to me concerning you, my brethren, by those of Chloe's household, that there are contentions among you. So contentions, debate, strife, variance are all the ways that that word can be translated, and they're taking place at this congregation in Corinth. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 1 through 3. And I, brethren, could not speak to you as the spiritual people, but as the carnal, as the babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are not able to receive it, for you are still carnal. And then we hear a list of the carnal things that were taking place in that congregation. For when there are, where there are envy and strife and division among you, are you not carnal and walking according to man? So in other words, not walking according to God. And if you reflect on the statement for a minute, you realize how thorough this problem is. There's envy in their minds, there's strife with their words, and there's division with their actions. So does anybody want to sign up to go attend the congregation in Corinth? But yet Paul doesn't disengage with them. Paul's working with them because of his love for them. And he even says, if you notice, my brethren. And he says in 1 Corinthians 3:23, and you are Christ, and Christ is God. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 18, part of the statement says, now some are puffed up. Has anybody ever been in a congregation with somebody who's puffed up? Has anybody ever been that person in a congregation who's puffed up? 1 Corinthians 5, verse 1. It has actually been reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and such sexual immorality is not even is named among the Gentiles. And we don't need to go into the details there, but clearly another thing Paul has to deal with. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 1. Dare any of you having a matter against another go to the law before the unrighteous and not before the saints? In verse 6, brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. So you just start reiterating this list of things that Paul is dealing with in this congregation, and you imagine sitting there, and it's a difficult place to be. But it sets an expectation for us, not of things in any sense that we should desire, not in any sense should persist, and Paul gives very strong correction to these things, but they're things that we may also have to endure. And again, the point I'd like to make here is Paul stays engaged. His deep love for people, his hope, his self-examination and understanding of his own past and present, I think is what enables him to endure these things and to hang with these people. Final example, 1 Corinthians 8, verse 11 through 12. Sorry, second to final. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 11 through 12. And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish, for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. So there's more problems in the church. People with knowledge maybe not being as considerate of the weaker brethren as they should be. And then in verse 13, Paul gives an example of correction and what he would do. And 1 Corinthians 8, verse 13, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. So we see this wholehearted, absolute commitment on Paul's part. The last example, which I'll actually skip, if you want to take a note on it, though, is 1 Corinthians 11, verse 18, and 1 Corinthians 11, verse 21, people getting drunk at Passover. I mean, unbelievable activities taking place. And again, Paul doesn't endure allow these things to persist, but they're things that happened in the past. One of the other things we have to endure is Satan's attack. In Revelation 2, verse 10, do not at all fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil will cast some of you into prison so that you may be tried. And you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful to death, and I will give you a crown of life. So the point of especially bringing up the message, the things happening in Corinth, is to encourage us, including myself, to stick together and to support one another, correct one another when necessary. I think Michael Link, Misha quoted Ecclesiastes, where it says a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And I think Satan would desire nothing better than to start picking little strands apart and to watch those cords fall apart. Okay, so those were some of the things that we may have to endure. Now we're going to look at how can we endure. How can we be strong? How can we succeed no matter what the trials, no matter what the tribulation, physical or mental or financial, and so on? And I think the first, and most important point that we have to acknowledge is the fact that we can endure. And the fact that we can endure is absolute. Everyone who God has called can endure. And we know this for two reasons. The first is 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. Says, no temptation or trial has overtaken you except such as is common to man. So it is, I think, somewhat comforting to know that the things that we struggle with, the most private thing we'd be embarrassed about if anybody knew, Paul says it's common. It's common to man. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, no temptation or trial has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted or tested beyond what you are able. So God does not allow any of us to be tested or tempted beyond what we're able to endure or overcome. So in other words, God is actively involved in each of our lives. He knows our hearts. He knows our limits. He knows what we need. And he's looking out for us. To finish the verse, but with the temptation or test, we'll also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. And not only does God make a way of escape for us, but he gives us the strength to take it, the strength to endure. And this is the second reason that we know we can endure. It is God that gives us the strength and the faith we need. And if you turn to Psalms 119, verse 27 and 28, and we'll see David praying for this strength. Psalm 119, verse 27, make me to understand the way of your commandments, and I will speak of your wonderful works. My soul weeps for grief. Strengthen me according to your word. So God makes the way of escape. He can make us understand, and he can give us all the strength we need for any circumstance. Psalm 27, verse 13 and 14. Psalm 27, verse 13, I would have fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Hope in the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall make your heart strong. Yes, hope in the Lord. So the first key to enduring our struggles is to know that we can. God will provide the way of escape, and he will give us the strength if we ask for it. The second key is to study endurance. In fact, that's what we just did. We just very briefly looked at how did David endure. And we read the Old Testament and the New Testament. We see these problems going on at Corinth. We see the challenges that David had or Solomon. And we see examples of success and failure. And of course, it's important we follow the right one of those. You know, failure teaches what to avoid, and success teaches us what to imitate. Romans 15, verse 4 says this: For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, so that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. And so if you read Romans 15, you see a good example of Christ given in here, in Christ's endurance through suffering. Provides us, obviously, a fantastic example. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition or our instruction, upon whom the ends of the age have come. And as Mr. Zerung just pointed out, you know, it's no longer a theory. We see the signs of the time coming, so we should obviously pay close heed to this. The rest of 1 Corinthians 10 tells you about the failure of the Israelites to endure. They couldn't endure without God's instruction. They couldn't endure with his correction. They couldn't even endure without meat. So, you know, it provides us an example of what not to do. One of the most compelling examples of endurance, and what I had desperately hoped to make this message about and just bit off more than I could chew, was Sir Ernest Shackleton's Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition. And if you studied this at all, it's just an unbelievable example of human endurance and leadership. Without having all the facts, he intended to go to Antarctica and cross it. His boat gets destroyed, and he and his men had lived for, I think, 2 years on ice, floating around, and they eventually get to this place, Elephant Island. All the men are alive and sick, and they decide to take this 23-foot boat called the James Caird 800 miles across the water with virtually no food. No, it was cloudy. They didn't have a GPS. When Mr. Kernicke said, there'll be a voice behind you saying, turn this way or turn this way, I thought of my GPS. So I'm sure that's not what he meant. But you read this, and you just, you say, I can never complain about anything. And it really sets a new level for your endurance for trials. And I think, obviously, the Bible is full of examples like that. So another key is to study examples of endurance. The simplest and probably the most ignored key is to simply not get involved in things that require endurance. Churchill said, it's amazing how well people can keep secrets they haven't been told. It's also amazing how easy it is to get out of trouble we don't get into in the first place. Right? So this is a couple of verses on this. Proverbs 22, verse 3. A prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Proverbs 14, verse 26. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but the fool rages and is self-confident. And, of course, our confidence shouldn't be in self, in our own wisdom or our own strength, but we should lean on God and God's Word and God's Spirit. Romans 16, verse 19. Again, Paul writing to a congregation. I would have you wise as to good and simple towards evil. So the wise foresee trouble coming, and they get out of the way. And that's the easiest way to endure. The next, I think, is probably the most difficult. It was a big part of Mr. Kernicke's message. But it is one of the most important keys to endurance, which is to keep our mind focused on the ultimate plan and the ultimate future. And I'd like to read a brief story about this topic. Is anyone familiar with Florence Chadwick? Okay, you got Eddie. That's good. In 1952, young Florence Chadwick stepped into the waters of the Pacific Ocean off Catalina Island and determined to swim 26 miles to the shore of mainland California. She had already been the first woman to swim the English Channel both ways. The weather was foggy, and chilly. She could hardly see the boats accompanying her. Still, she swam for 15 hours. When she begged to be taken out of the water along the way, her mother, who was in the boat beside her, told her she was close and that she could make it. Finally, physically and emotionally exhausted, she stopped swimming and was pulled out. It wasn't until she was on the boat that she discovered the shore was less than a mile away. So she went 98% of the way and gave up. And at a news conference the next day, she said, "All I could see was the fog. I think if I could have seen the shore, I would have made it." 98% of the way, but because she couldn't see, she gave up. And the point is simply this. The less real God is, the less real God's plan is, the less real the millennium is, the harder it will be for us to endure. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it will be harder and we're at more risk. And I think the parable of the sower in Matthew 13 addresses this in part. And also we see the right mindset exemplified in 2 Corinthians, if you'd like to turn there. In 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16 through 18. "For this cause we do not faint. Though our outward man perishes, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For the lightness of our present affliction works out for us a far more excellent, eternal weight of glory. We are not considering the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are not lasting, but the things which are seen are not lasting, but the things which are not seen are everlasting." And of course, faith is another important component of endurance. Hebrews 11, verse 1, which I'll read for you. "Faith is the essence of the things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." So staying close to God, staying focused on the priorities that we heard Mr. Link speak about, and others speak about, staying focused on the world tomorrow, which Mr. Kernicke talked about, are all keys to being able to endure whatever the trial is, to see our way through the fog. One of my favorite quotes, I think it's Robert Frost, said, "The only way through the woods is through the woods." Melissa uses that at work now, and her work queue's filled up, 10 miles high. And it's just, for me, it's so powerful, and it's so simple. There's no other way through the woods. You have to go. And as long as we keep focused on the end, we can make it. Incidentally, Florence Chadwick learned something from her experience. So 2 months later, she tried again. The same fog sets in, but she made it. And she said she made it because she maintained this mental image of the shore. She always knew it was there, but now she had followed the, I think it's an Arab proverb, fall down 7 times and get up 8. So the question for us is, though we may slip and we may stumble and we may fail at times, how many times are we willing to try and get up off the ground? And the best one-word answer to this question is until. We will not give up. One of my favorite speakers says, "How long would you give a baby How many tries would you give a baby to walk before you just gave up on them? Right? And the answer is until. You keep trying until they stand and they walk. There are many other factors related to endurance. I'll just quote some verses for you really quickly. James 4, verse 8, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. God is the source of our strength. The closer we are to him, the easier access I think we have to that strength. James 4, verse 6, in part says, therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So if we want strength from God, humility is a great starting point for that. Hosea 5, verse 15, if you want to note that in your notes. Part of drawing close to God and part of humility is repenting of our sins. And Hosea 5, verse 15 says, I will go, this is God speaking, I will return to my place until. Until when? Until they confess their guilt and seek my face. In their affliction they will seek me diligently. So we have this wonderful God who's long-suffering. He does have a point at which he says, if you really want to go that way on your own, you can do it. But if we turn and return to him, he's also full of abundant forgiveness. And of course, we should pray about every trial we have, especially when we're weak. One author gave us this advice. He says, every evening I turn my worries over to God. He's going to be up all night anyway. The final and most important key to overcoming is in 1 Corinthians 13, if you would turn there, please. And I'm going to read this without a lot of commentary. I think we all know this, but if you could think about it in terms of what it means for our individual ability to endure. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I have become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have prophecies and I understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so as to move mountains and do not have love, I am nothing. And though I give out all my goods to feed the poor, and though I deliver my body to be burned and have not love, I am profited nothing. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up. It does not behave rudely, does not seek her own, is not easily provoked, thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices in the truth. Love quietly covers all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So there is strength in love. Verse 8, love never fails. But if there are prophecies, they will fail. If there are tongues, they shall cease. If knowledge, it will vanish away. When I was an infant, I spoke as an infant, I thought as an infant, and I reasoned as an infant. But when I became a man, I did away with the things of an infant. And verse 13, and now hope, and now faith, hope, love, these three remain, but the greatest of these is love. There's a quote on this topic I'd like to share with you. It says this, being deeply loved by someone gives you strength. Loving someone deeply gives you courage. So love is to me the most fundamental, the most important, the most powerful tool for enduring. Christ endured the cross, hating the cross, the shame of it, because of his love for us. We can endure and do all things and persist through all things by having his love within us and showing it to others. In conclusion, I'd like you to think of the best time you've ever had in your life. Think of the best time you've had with friends, the best time you've had with family, with your wife or your kids, or your husband, your pets, or whatever the best time is that you've ever had. Think of the time when you felt most right with God, when you felt you had a clean mind, you ruled your own spirit, you were calm, collected, and kind. Now imagine living in that perfect state with good relationships, good health, good and clean mind, and imagine living that way forever. And so my hope for you and me is that we can engrave that vision on ourselves and do it so fully and so deeply that it doesn't matter when the fog comes in. That we can see that and it's so strong that we refuse to give up. We will make it to the land, to the new promised land, if we keep going. Even though it's not visible, even though we won't reach it immediately, reaching it is absolutely certain, absolutely guaranteed. It is yours, it is mine, if we will endure.